The following program may contain content not suitable for all audiences.
Still have his clacking on the floor, but
yeah.
I trimmed his nails when someone wish. He just gets all the little trimmed.
I have so many minutes of jingly collar on the cutting room floor.
Yeah. Because of Merlin.
Which I don't actually have because I don't keep any of that shit, but that's not important.
This is why I don't like recording online anymore.
Which we don't do much of that. I do now, I guess, don't I?
Yeah.
I gotta do recording online now. It's sad. It's a sad reality.
Buddy.
That's what you get for movie.
Okay.
You know what? Fuck it.
Yeah.
You just gotta roll with the punches, roll with the changes. I can't entirely say I regret the move because my wife is happier and healthier there.
Right.
But it was to a smaller community when I'm used to Wichita. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you guys are from...
I'm from California. Wichita is small.
I was just saying, well, I like the way you just said it. I'm from California. Pick a place. California, pick a place. Wichita, small. Kind of the way it feels.
I'd say Southern California from San Diego up to, I don't know, about San Francisco is one continuous city.
Yeah, that's kind of insane, isn't it? But that's reality now.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah,
except for Bakersfield. Nobody counts Bakersfield.
No one wants to be in Bakersfield. That's the problem.
I mean, it could be worse. It could be Chino.
So it's a little thing. It's something you got to deal with.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
I don't know the area, obviously.
We used to call Chino Cochino because it's where all the cattle farms are.
Yeah, so the whole area just smells like cattle farm. Yeah.
Nice. I lived in Dobbs City for 15 years.
Oh.
So,
you know the smell. You know the smell.
Well, you know, we got princess noses in SoCal, so we're not accustomed to smelling livestock.
Even after being around it, the people in that area probably are.
I mean, the people who live in Chino, maybe.
Yeah, that's what
but
I'm
everybody
saying.
Else driving through is like, oh my goodness. Oh, this roll is
up the
awful.
Windows.
I had no idea. I lived in Dodge City for 15 years, like that. And when I started dating Jonica, and we were high school sweethearts, sort of. We were high school whatever, something. And but that was before, you know, the internet.
Right.
It's like letter writing campaigns were all you had to work with. It was doomed to failure when I moved out there. Moving. I always fuck everything up by moving. And so I went out to Dodge City, and when I first got there, I remember the smell being an overpowering thing you just had to deal with. After a couple years, you completely forget, except on bad nights.
Right.
100% true, because we had been away from home for a couple years, and then we went back for a visit. And when we flew into L.A., I never realized Los Angeles had a taste before.
Yes.
It's like it's in the air.
So accustomed to the smog that you just don't notice when you see the taste of the air.
When you see those pictures of L.A. with the gorgeous blue sky.
Yeah, that shit's edited.
That's
Photoshopped. It's Photoshopped, yeah.
They caught that one day.
When you fly into
LAX. In 1967.
Right.
You can see the haze of like brownish green muck that's just settled down into the valley.
It's really bad when the wind's coming not from the ocean, but from Bakersfield and the whole area. Just they'll have low visibility warnings, and it's because of the smog.
That's great. I'm not even sure how to deal. Not even sure. And I mean, I've never lived in. Well, and you guys know, I've never lived in a place that had to do with wildfires until now.
Yeah.
So we get fires up there because it's an arid area. It's really dry. And I wasn't sure what to expect because you don't get a lot of lightning west of the Rockies.
Right.
For some reason. But we're in the Rockies. So I didn't know. You know, because you got to go through some Rockies to get to where we're going. Not a lot, but it takes an hour or so to get there through the mountains. And sure enough, there's lightning.
Yeah.
And other things, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, but it's pretty hard. Nothing grows there. Scrub. It's like...
Are you in that, like, high desert or whatever they call it?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And, I mean, the contrast is striking because we call it that. Because I first heard Jonica use the term, and I assumed that she had picked it up from somebody else that she works with or something. I wouldn't say, yeah, it's high desert, but... Or maybe just her impressions. But I definitely wouldn't have called it desert before living there a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, but there is so little moisture in the air that it doesn't hold.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't hold heat. So it gets hot during the day, but it's literally that heat where it could be, I can't say like 105 like it was here in Wichita today. Because it doesn't do that there. It's up over 7,000 feet. It doesn't get to fucking 105 degrees, which I'm really happy about. I mean, this was shock.
Frigid.
Yeah.
But that's exactly it. And the other thing is that even when it does get up to like 90 degrees, you step into the shade and it's instantly 10 degrees cooler.
Right.
Which you don't get that here because
you don't
humidity.
Have the humidity holding all that heat.
This is Meta Gamers Anonymous. Thank you for listening. episode number 277, we looked it up. My name is Eric.
I'm Joe.
And I'm Alicia.
And this is just us. Us. Jonica's snoozing in the next room, but she couldn't be bothered.
Yeah.
Jonica. She just couldn't be bothered.
Well, that's what you get for breaking an ankle.
Right?
She's tired. Give the girl a break.
You know what? Today was a rough day. Not a bad day by any stretch. I think it went pretty well, all things considered. But we came to Wichita today for a convention. We're here for Anime Fest Wichita. And just promoting the convention and selling tea this week. And that's all we're doing. Just for a couple days.
That's on teas.shop.
Yeah, that's the place. And we busted our ass trying to get here in time. And it still didn't happen. Their vendor hall, they don't open it until 5 o'clock Friday evening when people get out of work and shit, right?
Yeah.
And I think in the past, Fridays have been... I remember the last con we were at for AFW. It didn't seem that busy on Friday evening. But this time, I think people are ready for cons, which makes me really happy. I think it's a, it's a pattern. The hall for people waiting to get into the vendor hall at 5 o'clock was pretty packed.
I know after the couple weeks ago now, the game day, I'm ready for more in-person gaming. That was a blast.
I wish I could have been there.
Yeah.
That was so much. You got to go for a little bit, didn't you? Oh, I see you're getting there.
Yeah. I'm just trying to help you out, man. It's a nice rubberized coaster, so it doesn't pick up on your mic as bad.
Clink, clink, clank, clank.
Right. I thought of things, okay?
I appreciate you.
Knock it off.
Yeah, you got to go to the game day a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't mean to play. I showed up to say hi and wound up playing a Spice Girls game.
Yeah, you got pulled into the Spice World.
How'd that go?
It was chaos.
Yeah.
yeah.
Absolute chaos. I fixed somebody's heels with hammers.
And not by hammering on a heel, no. Just replace the heel.
No, I
with
made her
hammer.
Power stomp onto the hammer to replace the heel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I had to save the show, man. The show must go on.
Nice.
Yeah.
I already got kind of a report on it. I just kind of wanted to see the look on your face when I asked about it. Makes great radio.
Right. Yeah.
We haven't gotten a game much, man.
Stupid life.
Shit keeps getting in the way.
My home game's been like that, too, because we've had to cancel several for
various
reasons.
We had the same thing happen with my other games, too.
We have one session left.
Tomb of Annihilation. Oh, no!
Yeah.
At the very end.
We cut... Anyone, spoiler if you haven't played Tomb of Annihilation, but at the very end, we're kind of in the last battleground. We destroy the Soulmonger. A Sererac walks in, gives an epic quote, and that's where we ended our session.
Oh, nice.
I did not have an Atropal mini. Did you see that TikTok?
I saw the TikTok. Yeah, I was wondering what that was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was creepy, all right.
It looked straight out of Toy Story, one of Sid's toys.
Yeah, it did. Which is a Nightmare Fuel movie, actually.
Yeah.
Can you believe that somebody dared to say that was made for kids? I think as an adult, I had nightmares, and I don't think that's...
There's a few Pixar movies that you really kind of question it. The Cars 2... The first Cars, okay, happy little go lucky racing movie. The second one, if you buy into the fact that these cars are living, there is torture and murder in this happy go lucky kids movie.
That's true.
It is true.
That's true. I think by making it Cars, it seems somehow less. Yeah, but no, I mean, same thing with toys, right?
Right.
In Toy Story 3, which is just gets dark.
Yeah.
Because that teddy bear is dark.
Yeah, he is.
That teddy bear is very dark.
But
which makes you wonder, why don't we anthropomorphize the things that are given, full-on personalities?
Toy Story 3.
Yeah.
That's kind of why we don't.
This is creepy.
Right.
No, there's something to that. I think kids do, don't they? I mean...
Kids do, but as adults. Like, we're just writing it off. We're like, it wasn't that bad. It's just cars getting tortured and murdered.
Right, yeah. They're fine.
They have very human-like personalities, and we automatically don't anthropomorphize them.
Well, if you think about it, and I mean, there's something to that, because obviously the quick and easy answer is just kind of like with a lot of people, the way they approach things like role-playing games, there's not really any gravity there that you don't give it.
Right.
So it's a safe space to do the terrible things.
I wonder more if it has to do with, like, the visual appearance of the characters in the movie. Like, in Toy Story, they have two arms, two legs, and a face.
It's true. But which did make it kind of terrifying.
It's just a car with eyeballs.
And, yeah.
But you're right. They had plenty of personality, so it still seems to track.
Yeah, but our brains don't process it that way.
But also, I think you have to expect that the idiom lacks cohesive qualities that explain things like that. Like, in the Cars universe, how far does the metaphor stretch?
Right.
You know, how alive are they? If they function just like a machine and have parts that can be replaced and, you know, all the things that go with that, do they fit the same descriptor as a living embodiment that, if when pieces are taken off, suffers?
And then you're quickly getting to the whole ship of Theseus type stuff.
Very much so. Once you replace every... Yeah, exactly. No, I think it's a good question, though. I think it's an interesting character study about us more than the characters. But I've never run up against it in a way that matters. Just like with those kinds of shows, since the movies are geared technically towards a young audience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Although, like you pointed out, in Pixar, that young audience isn't necessarily as young. Right. Or at least has a broader context to it, which is one of the reasons to love Pixar.
Yeah.
Frankly. But I would have to say that they don't answer those questions so that it isn't really an issue.
Right.
And the kids don't have those questions. You know, the kids aren't asking that. Well, some of them might. But by and large, you know.
I do think kids ask those questions, though, because, like, our 3-year-old nieces watched Cars not that long ago, and they'll say things like, Cars sad. They understand the idea that the car has feelings and thoughts and dreams and that kind
but
of stuff.
But it is sad.
They'll ask questions
in that regard. I mean, because
it
is affecting a person in some fashion, sure.
Yes, but you just said it there.
Right.
They're assuming the car is a person.
Right. It doesn't necessarily mean in context that it's the same as a person. It just means that it's a person to them. A character is a person to them, right?
You know? But I think that's where you're hitting it, though. I think children are assuming that the car is its own person with feelings and dreams and stuff. And as adults, we're like, but it's not really a person. It's a car.
Awesome content for a role-playing podcast.
Well,
no, seriously,
though. Do you understand what I'm saying,
absolutely.
Though? Like,
absolutely.
We as adults, like, the way that we've grown up has formed the way that we look at things, and children are still in that developmental stage.
Right.
And they're not encumbered by all of those preconceived ideas.
But I think, and I'm not trying to sell kids a short shrift. I know kids understand things. But I think there's also a certain level of which, like I said, some of those details don't matter to the kids.
Yeah.
If you were to approach the matter of the kid who goes, oh my God, they're torturing that poor car.
Yeah.
Because it's a car, your average 12-year-old boy is going to go right on.
And honestly, because I've brought this up with multiple people about Cars too, and even adults, like even you did right there when I said it, you kind of paused and went, wait, yeah, you're right. It's even adults don't put it together that no, this is murder, like torture and murder in a kid's movie.
Still wasn't as good as the first movie.
No.
the
first was great. The second, not good. The third was all right.
Yeah, it's funny. We were having a conversation the other day about James Bond because all the Bond movies. Do you watch the Bond movies?
I do.
He loves Bond.
I've always enjoyed them.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed them. And ever since I was a kid, and I grew up in the 80s, so like Roger Moore was my first James Bond. Yeah.
Pierce Brosnan was my first.
And arguably the best. I realize there's a lot of argument in that. But,
But they just decided to go Pierce, full though. Over the top with him, and it worked.
And it fit. Anyway, not important.
Yeah.
It's an academic argument. But I would have to say that, by and large, most Bond movies are very enjoyable and terribly forgettable.
Yeah.
I often do not remember the details of these films. I mean, sometimes a few important details will stick out or, you know, stay with me. But this last one, have you seen No Time to Die?
Yes. Yes, I did.
This last one, Johnny and I just watched it recently, and I was thinking, I mean, not only was I surprised by what they did in the film, because I hadn't read anything about it, any kind of spoilers, I thought this was great. But at the beginning of the movie, the kind of setup seemed to assume you knew some stuff from the previous.
Right.
And I did not remember this shit.
I know I seen it because I remember the end.
Right.
But I couldn't tell you what happened.
The bad guy was. But that's because he was going to be the bad guy.
Yeah. But like the details of the first 2 hours,
I was kind of excited about this one because I heard it was good. I knew that it was going to be Daniel Craig's last one.
Right.
And I knew Rami Malek was in it, and I like him. You know, and I thought he'd be good as a villain.
Which
you,
I remember him being good.
Yeah, yeah. Again, it's actually only been a matter of days since I watched it, and the details are already fading. They just aren't memorable movies. No. I don't know why. This one got closer, I think, because they humanized him a little bit more. Good story. We'll do that.
Yeah.
But that's one of the problems I've seen with games, too, that I think is interesting. If you don't take advantage of opportunities to make the characters matter to the players, to make them feel real, you know, and they are more than anthropomorphized, of course, because they are, I didn't say that very well. Anthropomorphize. Oh, you guys know what I said.
Fix it in post. It's fine.
Yeah. But give me a second. Anthropomorphized. There. Just there. Toss that right in.
Nice clean take.
Nobody will ever be able to tell.
No, it's very smooth. Like,
I am totally talking about anthropomorphized.
Yes. That's the one. You know, I mean, they're characters, so obviously they exist in that context because that's the entire point. You know, unless you play something that's alien enough that it doesn't have the same number of digits or is mechanical or a magical creation. Or I mean, there's obviously variations on the theme that you could take it to. But idealistically, they're all still characters with personalities and consequences to their life, which can affect us as players. But the way people attach themselves to the characters, the way they deal with that, says a lot about how far they think, how able they are to go down that rabbit hole.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Your car's question will matter more to some people than others.
Right.
And I think that's probably going to be a lot of the same people, right? The more interesting it gets, the more of a role player you have, or the more somebody who's going to be affected by what happens to the character.
And that's something I've noticed.
The character's friends.
Right.
That's something I've noticed, like, comparing long-form tabletop compared to one-shots.
Well, naturally.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the reason, like, when I run a one-shot...
Hey, you're doing it too.
Yeah. When I run a one-shot, I tend to come up with, like, the Spice World or the Wendy's.
Something silly.
Because I know that people aren't going to be super attached to the character. They're going to play it for a couple hours and then move on.
Right.
So I'm trying to create...
A
memorable experience out, like, with the game... Because I know the characters aren't going to be.
And the best thing about that at a con or an event like that is that you lay it right out there. So the people that sign up for it are the kind of people that are going to want exactly what you're offering.
Yeah.
Or are deadly curious about what that is.
Or I've also ran a couple Zelda games. So even if you're not super attached to the individual character, you already know the world enough that it's engaging.
Particularly since the players who sign up for it
again,
are largely going to be people who are already interested and attached to the Zelda world.
Right.
Which I think was fantastic. Yeah. That's really great. It's fun. And those games were very successful, too.
Yeah.
Online games, all right?
Yeah. I designed the Zelda game specifically for online. It really, the final dungeon wouldn't work on the tabletop because it was built as a computer, like a video game screen, because it was the layout from the original Zelda dungeons, but I made it custom using that artwork.
Yeah.
So it was built as a grid where I can reveal each screen on Roll20.
Crazy. I want to ask, because we started the current campaign online.
Right.
As an online game during the pandemic, because we couldn't get together. Yeah. And once we had the opportunity, and we batted the idea around a little bit, well, let's go ahead and game in person. And there was a weird period of adjustment. Remember that, like, two sessions or so, where it's like not a lot's happening because we're kind of like, you show up and we're just like, you know, enjoying the company and getting distracted by all the little things, you know. And then, like, there was also things like I wasn't sure how to break the ice and get things moving or anything when you're sitting at the table anymore. It had been a year and some change. And so now that we've had to go back online, how much do you think the experience of playing these characters in that more intimate setting is going to influence the way the game will be played for you here on out?
Yeah. I've always felt like having now lived through multiple years of online gaming.
Right.
When you're online, there's a lot less, or how to word it, everyone it almost seems a little more focused because you can't really have the multiple conversations, so you don't get the couple of people talking about what happened last Saturday while someone else is having a scene.
But conversely, if you did, then somebody else couldn't be having their scene. Right now, if Joe and Bob over there want to sit there and have a conversation, we can still continue gaming because we can communicate.
So people are more focused, but at the same time, I think, even though I would have never said this beforehand, I feel like that side talk is almost a part of the experience, because this is something we all do to hang out with our friends. Yeah, we're here to play D&D, but we're also here to hang out with people we like to be with.
The social activity.
So, yeah, you lose part of that social. And I would have never thought the crosstalk at the table was an important part of the game, but I really do feel like it's part of the experience.
Well, obviously, we don't get that now. We do have the advantage of having the smaller groups.
Yes.
I think that makes a difference. I know we added Kid in.
Yeah.
And so that brought our number of players in that group to 5. Still very manageable.
5 is a good... 4 or 5 is a good number online.
I think so.
I know when we were playing in person before the pandemic, Alicia was running a game. We had, 7 players?
Mm-hmm.
But that was here at the table. And 7 players at a table is doable.
Yeah.
But 7 online would be a nightmare.
I've done it, but not a lot. And I can't say it was necessarily as fun.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you got players who are focused and really engaged, then you can. But ultimately, even at the table, when you have 7 players, usually a couple of those players are not terribly engaged most of the time. You know, often if you find a group of 7 players, it doesn't matter how good your group is, there's going to be a couple of players who are not the kind of people that are usually engaged. They're there to have a good time.
Right.
So they don't volunteer as much. They get distracted easy. They wait for their turn and don't pay as much attention, what have you.
Yeah.
Well, and I've always had 1 or 2 that are also really quiet and have a hard time speaking up. Mm. And when I have the larger groups, it's harder for them to...
That's a good point, too.
Yeah, and get out there and do things.
And I do know, at least, I think why the bigger groups still, though, work better in person is it's easier as a DM to see, oh, this person's not really been... engaged, and
right,
you can say, hey, what is your character?
Yeah, a little harder when you look at the video screens.
Yeah, I find it a lot harder to keep track of it online.
Yes.
Also say that you lose that personal connection, too. Like, when you're having an argument in character with somebody, there's that almost, like, palpable tension between two people. You don't get that online.
Yeah.
And I think that does affect the way that we...
There was an event that we had discussed on our show a long time ago that Jason and I were discussing that happened between him and Jonica, a character v. character argument.
Yeah.
That kind of blew up in a fantastic way. It was born out of a tense moment and a bad decision and blew up in a fantastic way. And Jason had to leave, had to get home and get to work or something, and had to get out the door and slammed the door in real life as his character was slamming the door
right
in the scene, you know. And he got that moment. And then he's like texting Jonica and going, hey, everything cool? You know?
Right.
And of course, you know, Jonica's the kind of player who, much to some people's chagrin, is all in.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't hold back on stuff like that.
She did that with me the first time that our characters had a big argument. Because they got pretty heated. I was about to say,
Yeah, that's true.
I can't remember the name of the
And she's like, just to be clear, our characters are arguing. You're good, right? And yeah, I'm good. Let's do this.
I was going to bring that up because my notes for your game are now downstairs by the computer because I don't have the name of my city off the top of my head.
Right.
But it was the one where it was like where time was almost stopped in that forest village.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And you were getting the stones.
That was actually, I think, just about the incident that had the most real collision within the party of the campaign, at least the first one that had
that was the first big one that we all
and
disagreed.
It's not like they were all just getting along the whole time or anything, but one of the interesting things about this group is that they're not like usually your campaign groups come down to either the party that gets together for a purpose and goes to do the thing, or the party that is thrown into a situation and reacts to the thing as a group. These guys aren't either.
Right.
You know, they're kind of like they were all witness to a situation, but there was already something that was kind of bringing them together, and they went ahead and just went with that and decided to go do the thing.
Yeah.
You know, and that has led to just endless adventure ever since, which I think has been really great.
Yeah.
It's really a really cool story so far. But the characters, consequentially, have never pretended to be more cohesive than they are, but they've become really linked.
Yeah.
There's a lot of friendship in the party. There's a lot of respect in the party.
Right.
You know, even for Squelch, which is so weird.
Yeah. I mean, my character, Vinkarin, was convinced for the longest time that Jonica's character just wrote her off as evil.
Right. Right. Well, and this, because she had that kind of, I don't want to speak out of turn, she could be in here to defend herself if she has a problem, but because she had...
If she wanted to, she could get up out of bed and come out here and defend herself.
We will now pause to see if
Nope.
Okay.
Do we hear snoring?
It's just
we
so
from the distance. Shut up!
It is just so typical to have her interject suddenly in the middle of a podcast when I don't even know she's there.
Wait. Are there clouds? Nah, she's asleep.
Yeah.
I thought I heard something. Are you sure?
Yeah, but she was, Nyssa was very much had that holy, holy, holy vibe.
Yeah.
In addition to being kind of a quiet character at first, because she was, her whole kind of program was to observe and record information to less about being part of the story and being the witness to the story.
Right.
Well, and that quiet religious dedication almost gave her an air of very much a black and white sort of mentality, which is what led to the conflict between your characters.
Yeah, because Venkaren has some very definite evil influences on her life.
And so does Gwen.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. The difference being that Gwen didn't give a shit if... Neera, God, her, this character is amazing. She just, it floors me with the things that she does and the lengths she goes to explore what Gwen can be.
Yeah.
You know, she decides a lot, not just about how she responds to things, because that's also one of those challenges I've noticed with role-playing when people get really character deep, is you have kind of two choices regarding the direction your character's personal story goes, proactive or reactive.
Right.
Most of the time. And the reality of our world is that we're often stuck in a combination of the two. And when we get too far one way or the other is often when we lose control.
Yeah.
You know, when you become very proactive, it may feel like you're making decisions and taking life by the reins, but more often it leaves you unable to react to things because you're so determined to be in control.
I mean, how many of us have, in that game, killed ourselves for various reasons?
Oh my God.
Two of you.
That is just insane,
Two of you.
Yeah.
And both were amazing scenes.
Yeah.
You know, it's just ridiculous. I like the fact that it was two of you, not me. This was... No cap.
One was me.
But I will say this. So part of that really strong reaction I just gave you is having run games in public play spaces, there's been a history of people in that space committing suicide with their character when they're not getting their way or when they're upset with the way that the story is going. So I have a little bit of a visceral reaction to self-harm scenes, but it has absolutely nothing to do with that. Both of those I don't have a problem with because there was a reason.
Yeah.
Even though
absolutely a story-based reason.
Even though the reality of the situation actually makes them more poignant.
Yes.
And more of a trigger in reality than, say, somebody just flippantly going, you know, I have the one leverage I have is that I could just kind of screw over this whole gaming thing by just making myself, disposable.
Well, if you're not going to let me do what I want, then I'm just going to kill my character. My character is going to kill themselves, and I'll just make a new character. And I'm like, that's a very childish way to come at it.
Yeah.
That's where that reaction came from.
But if you're not enjoying the character you got,
we could also just say farewell to your character and just make a new one. We don't have to be dramatic.
It doesn't have to be death.
Who would ever have a character just leave the party?
I have no idea.
I've only done that multiple times
twice
to you.
Now.
Yeah, twice to you.
Probably both times with characters you really liked and would have preferred to keep playing.
Yeah.
Actually.
Especially Lorin.
Lorin I was really interested in.
Yeah, and I played one session of him and he left.
Hey, this scene is not for me.
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of like in your game where it was not an already cohesive party. We were very much thrown together by the fates. And instead of like our game where, okay, we're all thrown together, but we're going to roll with it. Lorin wasn't rolling with it. And he left.
Right. And it was early in the campaign.
Yeah. It was session one.
So there hadn't been any real bonding at that point. Yeah.
He had one.
Kim's character was still mad about that.
Yeah. Because
like a year later.
Because of course, Alicia, a year later, had Lorin show back up.
Oh my gosh, that party was so mad.
Exactly.
They might have gotten beat up by his former party. There might have been some punches thrown by some very sweet female characters, normally. But they had a lot of sass in that moment.
Yeah. But yeah, with him, he had basically one hard, fast rule that he was not going to go to the surface. This was her underwater game.
Right.
And he hated the surface. He lived there. He was a sea elf. He had lived there for like 600 years and gave up with it. He was done and had no ties to this party. And it was clear by the end of session one that we were going to have to go to the surface. So he went, all right. And in the middle of the night, he just left town.
Now, I know you were running this game.
Yeah.
So did you know you were going to do that with the campaign going in? Was that the decision?
I did. And I do believe we had a discussion. And I was like, do we need to change something? And Joe was like, nah, do what you're going to do. And yeah. I'm like, okay.
Because I have obviously no problem making a new character.
No, but I mean, there is something to that as a game master that could be a little frustrating. Because if you're being transparent up front... I mean, and not that it's any of my business. If I'm the GM and you just want to change characters, that's one thing.
Yeah.
You know, but you literally were making a character that wasn't going to be compatible with the campaign one session in.
Well, when I made the character and I created his whole backstory, I didn't know that was going to happen.
No, but
so when you were the, but before
there was a discussion about it
before the campaign started, still right? So you had the
I'm
you
trying
had the
to remember
conversation.
If it was before.
It was after session one because I just slipped you a note because it was basically at the end of the session. And I just slipped her a note that said when the party goes to check his room, he left in the middle of the night. So later that day, the party checks the room and he's gone.
I do have a tendency as a game master to look at a situation like basically it's sort of you did and say, although with the, you know, the expectation that we want to continue playing this character and say, is there something we can do to make this story work?
And the answer was no.
Not with, because when we were discussing
it
after.
I'm not attacking
your decision-making. You know. But when we were discussing it after, it's like, you know, if things had played out different in that first session and we did bond, he might have, you know, went with them, but he wasn't going to go up onto the land. He'll go up near the shore, but the party didn't mesh and gel that first session.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, one session is always hard to say.
Yeah.
But
so, I mean, it was obviously dramatic, but I kind of liked because it felt more real that, you know, not everyone gets along and you're not just... Oh, well, these happen to be the people we're playing, so obviously
it's
they're going to get together.
It's an interesting point, though, too. And typically, like, if I start a campaign, I give a couple examples. I start a campaign with a theme that's kind of already developed. Like, in the Zeitgeist campaign that we ran for a while for Ian Publishing, the characters all start as officers of the Royal Homeland Constabulary.
Yeah.
So you have an established relationship, an expectation, and chain of command, even.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when you kind of build from there, everything they do, it doesn't actually matter how they gel because they all have a larger sort of umbrella of obligation that guides their actions and keeps them on the same path. Every time that I've started a campaign that there's that sort of thing, some sort of organizational bond or some sort of purpose, like you're all members of the resistance against this tyrant or whatever, you know, then there's no need for that, period. It's one of those things that, as much as I get really kind of frustrated sometimes by really contrived things like that, especially for starts. On the other hand, it really shortcut a lot of process. But you could never have the story like we're getting, because these characters took a long time to gel.
Right.
At least cohesively. You started seeing little bonds being formed between them early, and then those would shift and change. Mostly because Squelch changes who he likes every 2 days.
Yeah.
Hey, that is not true.
How would you know? You don't remember.
I got it all written down.
Get it all written
right.
I remember better than you do.
That's probably true at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, but really, there was a lot of sort of hemming and hawing about the bonding of the characters. It wasn't important because the story didn't require it. And I think consequentially, that gave you guys the freedom.
Yeah.
To not have that and still be on the same path. And as a game master, I was on the lookout for situations that may develop where I might have the need or at least feel inclined to step in and say, hey, are things developing in a way here that you're not necessarily happy with the way it's going? Is there something that I can help with to change that, or something you and I can decide between us? Yeah, I will have conversations with players sometimes. They're like, you know, is there something your character could decide or something that about their realization of things that could make a different decision at this time?
Yeah.
Plausible. Things like that. You know, because you never want to take agency away. You know, the player should have control over their character's decisions, actions, and behaviors. But the goal is to create a good and compelling story comprehensively and together is a big part of that because it's a party initiative.
I mean,
that's
the kind of and even though we weren't part of, you know, the guards or whatever, we did all have that bond almost of there was obviously something going on that we didn't understand and we were all kind of being pulled towards figuring out what's going on. Van Karn obviously had this, who is now her patron, who's one of the gods, but at the time didn't know, pulling her towards something.
Right.
And was trying to find out what it is.
And that mystery was part of what got them going on the same path.
Yeah, and that
it's like, oh, wait a minute. You know, you have an interest, I have an interest in it. They're not the same interest. That's interesting.
You're right.
You know, are they the same goals? We don't know. Well, if we hang out, maybe we'll find out.
Yeah.
What if we find out it's not? Oh, that could be interesting, too.
in Alicia's underwater game, and also just for context, before that, like, we had a session zero, and one of the questions she asked is, you know, what do you want to get out of this? And every last player said they want heavy roleplay. They were less worried about
combat
or any of that. We wanted roleplay, which is awesome. And
it's a good feeling.
Isn't it? Yeah,
it is.
And
it was a good game. Real sad it died.
I know.
All our players, their characters didn't know it. We just all happened to be in a town that got attacked. And it wasn't even like a direct intentional attack.
No, it was an accident.
Yeah. And the players, some of the players had close ties. We had someone who was a city guard and they had close ties to the city. So they were more motivated. My character was a crotchety old man who just happened to be there as a bard.
Right.
So he didn't have that tie to the city. He didn't gel with the people.
Now, at that moment, do you feel yourself obligated to try and decide how they're going to tie themselves in? I mean, or do you play it purely reactionary?
I was playing it. I mean, we all wanted to role play, so I was just kind of role playing it as it came. Yeah. I wasn't trying to think ahead of how can I tie the person in. I was trying to think how would this character respond in this situation.
Which is excellent.
Yeah.
But again, it's also very reactionary.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things I think is important to recognize when you're trying to create story. Because you as a player do have agency that gives you the ability to determine your character's role in things, even beyond the scope of what's happening right this second.
Yeah.
You know, just like we as people in our lives and our world have the ability to do stupid things like pull up stakes and move to Colorado. No.
Yeah.
That we have the ability to do things that will affect the rest of our lives, but we have the pros and cons of it, the weight of it, the choices.
And he was helping them during the initial attack and getting the city through it.
Well, obviously when shit's going down.
Yeah, when the shit was going down.
So, you know.
It was just the aftermath. The, okay, we're going to go to the surface. We're going to try to stop what's happening to our city. At that point, he had no interest in that.
Right. And you respected the character's initiative in that regard.
Yeah.
And
again, I talked to Alicia after the session and everything was cool. And we worked together. And I created a new character that was able to tie in really nice and who was a lot more motivated and gelled with the party.
Yeah, I have a campaign I'm running right now with. It's a very dungeon crawling game. It's online. Where they haven't had a ton of character death, but it's happened, right?
Yeah.
And they're good. They're getting to the intermediate levels now. Six level characters, I think. Yeah. And the other day, they had a session in which we had a beatdown. It wasn't a TBK because everybody survived, but it was a surprise when everybody survived in one of these situations. And it was one of these where it wasn't just bad die rolls. There were other things involved too. It was like bad timing. There was a dungeon they're in. They get past all the door guards and stuff in one session. The next session, there's a door at the end of a room where they can hear some chanting or something beyond. They know that there's some cultists around here, so there's probably, you know.
Yeah.
And it turns out the door had a glyph of warding on it.
Oh, yeah.
This is the one time that nobody thought to stop and check for traps. They were too distracted, I think, by the whole, you know, what's going on. And then getting ourselves into position and getting ready for what's going to happen next. And we're going to be practicing. Which even got them in close.
Yep.
Because, like, for a second, I thought the tank was about to open the door while everybody else was halfway across the room. And he was the only one who was going to hit. I was like, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
He'll be able to soak it up, even if he fails to save. Nah, everybody closed in close, and I damaged like 2/3 of the party automatically. It's 5 PCs and an NPC, so there's 6 of them. And when the explosion goes off, of course, everybody in the next room knows what happened.
Yeah.
Because they know the trap is there, and they know what it means when it goes off.
Yeah.
So they all turn around to deal with this threat. Now, to their credit, our party's premier members, you know, they take on their initiative the opportunity to run the fuck in and start the battle. You know? Okay? They were way in over their head.
Right.
I intentionally made this a really tough encounter. It was a deadly encounter if confronted all out, because they didn't have to do this way.
Yeah.
But they got in a lot of trouble really fast because there were just too many enemies. And a couple of them had, you know, potent spectacle abilities or fighting abilities. And one of them got, like, held by a whole person spell in the first round, and then he failed to save the next five rounds.
Oh, that sucks.
So he was the tank.
Oh,
he was the party's principal fighter. He ran in there ahead because he's usually the one that can stop people from getting past him.
Yep.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
So at that point, one guy sat there and tried to beat on him while everybody else kind of ignored him, right? You know? Meanwhile, that gave them the opportunity to you know, focus on the squishier members of the party. And they took down the paladin shortly thereafter. And one of the other party members would, when the next round would, you know, healing word or whatever, he'd get up.
And he'd right knock right back down. Yep. Yep.
Go right back down. I mean, this happened like four rounds in a row. Meanwhile, others are slowly getting whittled down and taken down too. They only managed in this fight, three of the party, the NPC and two of the PCs, ended up on death's door, you know, made their death saves, but they were all unconscious. The NPC auto-stabilized, but seeing the situation, played possum.
Oh, nice.
So then one of the party members was... he had a magic that swept him away before the death blow to his sanctum, the paladin, because he was it's a long story, it's not important. It's a very, very roleplay fun story.
Right.
But he was pulled away to this sanctum but he had to sacrifice a major magic item for the power to work. And it was automatic, you know, that he's still alive, just at 0 hit points. And, then the remaining two party members fled and managed to get out. One of the three that went down was also fleeing with them, but lagged behind the others because she would stop and do like Eldritch Blast or whatever.
Wasn't just dashing, was throwing spells still.
And she managed to get to the exit not too far behind the other two before got taken down to 0 hit points. But she got a Hellish Rebuke off, so they killed one enemy.
Oh.
Out of that entire mess, they only managed to kill one opponent.
That's a rough fight.
So, two guys got away thinking the rest of the party's dead.
Yeah.
One of them got transported off while he was unconscious, has no idea what happened to anybody. And then the other three get dragged out into the desert and dropped off left to die. But fortunately, the NPC is still awake, so he can protect them from getting killed that night and help them get back to, you know. And they don't know what happened to anybody.
Right, and everyone's now scattered to the wind.
And that's the way we're not having a session this week, so now they'll have to wait an extra week. It was crazy stupid. And I didn't anticipate it. I didn't expect things to go down. Because even as hard as the fight was, I didn't expect that shit.
Right.
And, I mean, in a way, kind of worse because they've completely tipped their hand now because the bad guy cultists know that the party's onto them. And they were checking them out for the Sheik. They were looking into this disappearance of a lady. Which may or may not have anything to do with these guys, but they uncovered this cult. And the Sheik's number two son is in with the cult, and they saw him there.
Right.
So he knows now that the paladin escaped somehow and has influence with his father, so he doesn't know how many minutes or hours he has to try to head that off.
Right.
You know, I'm sitting here thinking, what are my options? What are my options?
Yeah. That sounds like one of those that you have to plan 14 different options, and they're not going to do any of them.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, really, as a game master, the best thing I can do in this situation is plan exactly only what the NPCs are going to do and leave the rest absolutely in their hands.
Yeah.
But it has the potential to completely derail the story at this point because the principal mission ain't getting done.
Right.
And it's crazy to be in that situation, but it's fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't necessarily know how they're all going to deal, but, and again, there's not, I mean, it's an online game. The sessions are kind of short, usually only a couple, 3 hours at most. There's a lot of focus, but some players are better at that than others.
Yeah.
It depends on the week, you know, the day people have had, what have you. Really anxious to see what happens.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how they get back together if they don't know who's alive, who's dead, and where they are.
And then there's a question of that initiative, right? At what point does a party's primary objective when they become separated be get back together?
Yeah.
Now, two of them think everybody else is dead, so they're not even going to be thinking that way.
Right.
And the players, Nira and Richard in this case, aren't going to be thinking like that. They already know. And the players know, obviously. All the players know the situation. all the players know what the characters do not and will act accordingly. And so they're like, Nero's like, her character's like, well, you know what? The last time something like this happened, I went out into the woods and I found another likely couple of guys and asked them to join my quest. And so maybe that's what we're going to have to do again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, in the middle of the desert?
Van Karns had a little bit of that when that keep exploded.
Exactly. And I was going to draw that metaphor. Because right now, I mean, now that everybody knows.
Yes.
Now there's knowledge that has been shared. But I didn't anticipate that. I forgot that a character had the ability to use Ascending.
Right.
It had a magic item that would do that. Because you guys are seventh level, I think, D&D characters?
I think so.
And so you have some pretty potent abilities at your disposal, but you still only have what is available to your characters.
Right.
You know, oftentimes people forget it doesn't matter how powerful your group is. It matters what powers they have.
Yeah.
You know, and how complementary they are and how good they are at dealing with different types of situations.
Which is why in Alicia's Tomb of Annihilation game, I'm amazed we're still alive.
I am too.
Because our party is
Tomb of Annihilation.
Yeah. And we have...
I thought Brittany was dead.
Yeah, I'm playing a barbarian. We have one player who's a warlock and we have two rogues. And that's our whole party.
Warlock and two rogues. Yeah. I love it.
And the warlock only joined in later. Originally, it was the barbarian and two rogues.
Wow.
Now, I will say, Kim came up with an amazing way to change the path of her rogue. She came to me a few sessions ago.
Yeah, it's been a little while now.
We've seen a lot of death. My character's been really heavily impacted by that. And I was looking through one of the supplemental books and found this, what was it, like Shadow something?
Shadows. I don't remember the exact. I'd have to look it up.
It's a rogue path that has to do with, like, shadow magic and death and that sort of thing.
I've seen it. I think I've seen it.
I think you would know.
I think it's in Tasha's.
It is in Tasha's.
I think Jason played one in our Eberron campaign we did for a while. Where you had a power where he was able to, like, do attacks instead of the sneak attack. Like these tentacles. He had these tentacles, like, whipped out, like, these ephemeral tentacles that whipped out and, like, attacked people. As a sneak attack ability.
So she has the ability to, like, absorb souls that die into a stone and do stuff with it.
Okay, might be a different one then.
Yeah.
But I love stuff like that.
When a creature dies in front of her, she can pull a soul trinket from them. Yeah.
See, now, this is the stuff that I think is neat about them publishing material like that, is that people look at that and find inspiration in it.
And
she was like, can I switch the path of my character based on, I want to wait until something traumatic happens in the story, and then I'd like...
So you just waited for the right opportunity, or did you build the opportunity?
I knew the opportunity was going to come, and I texted her one night. I'm like, it's going to happen tonight. Awesome. Just so you know.
Awesome.
Like, absolutely 100% tonight, in this room you guys are in right now, there's no way you're getting out of here without something traumatic happening.
It helps that this is your, second time running this book? So and you know the
Brittany
module
got,
pretty well.
Like, so close to almost dying. And there were two Bodaks in this room that almost TPK'd them, and somebody had to cut their arm off to be able to get out of the room.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was a rough night.
So our warlock now has one arm and one rapier that's been attached to a nub.
Wow. That's crazy talk. Yeah. Which one are you playing?
I'm playing the barbarian.
Of course.
I'm a grung barbarian.
A grung?
Yes. And this is...
Who has twice or three times now almost gotten the entire party killed.
Yeah,
he likes to touch things.
And he had a berserker axe for a while, and he got hit and started attacking the nearest thing, which was the party.
Is that also the one that it's like you... It becomes the curse makes it so that you don't want to use any other weapon.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a character in my Tuesday game that has a sword version of that. I was a conversion from an earlier module. I like this idea. We'll make it a berserking weapon, which is what it was in first edition, but it works differently. It's like, okay. There's a berserker axe. We use that as a model. And he plays it really well because it's not his favorite weapon style at all. That long is a long sword, and he's like a too heavy. Anyway, he had other weapons that he liked better, but now his character, of course, only uses this one weapon, and it still has not bit him in the ass yet completely.
Mine takes so long. It's a wisdom save every time you get hit, and I'm a barbarian. I get like +1 to my wisdom save or something stupid.
Yeah.
And I made it every time for like 4 sessions. I was almost getting mad. I'm like, I want this to go wrong.
You were mad.
Yeah.
You would roll the die and you'd be like, I'm going to roll it. And I'm like, okay. Nobody even asked.
Yeah, no one
the
asked.
The other three players, nobody asked what he was rolling. Uh-huh. Until something very bad happened. Funny. And they were like, what just happened?
Yeah, because they just thought I had like a plus one axe.
See, there's an interesting thing too. In the One Way Online games, that particular game I was talking about, actually, strangely, and it has to do, I think, with the fact that the desert adventure I'm running, which is converted from a first edition adventure, is also in the desert. That whole theme, curses, seem to be part and parcel of that type of storytelling.
Yeah.
They picked up a lot of curse items. It just keeps happening, right? And it's been ironically funny because, like, coincidentally, Richard's character keeps being the one to come across them and handing them to, like, other people. You know, you'd be best suited.
Oh, yeah, this would be perfect for you.
He's been distributing cursed items, like, you know, that's left and right.
Fantastic.
But now to the point where people are probably looking at him going, if Jackson picks that up, I'm not going to take it from him.
Yeah.
You know, what? But, like, one of them is, in first edition, there was a ring of contrariness. I don't think I've seen this. Maybe they did in second, but I don't think I've seen it for a long time in any other edition. As a standard core item, anyway. And the Ring of Contrariness was one of these magic items. They had a lot of these cursed items back then that would, like, they would seem to be something else. So it's a cursed item. You think it's this thing, kind of like the Bag of Devouring thing, right? Yeah. It's the Bag of Holding, right? Yeah. Okay.
Dust of Sneezing and Choking.
Right.
Yeah.
Which identifies like as dust of invisibility.
Disappearance, yeah. And this one was a ring of some other magical thing. And this one was a ring of flight.
Like
fly ability, right? And it does actually give them the power to fly.
Oh, nice.
That is the actual power that the ring has. Unfortunately, its side effect curse is that any suggestion that anybody makes to the character is going to reject.
Hmm.
They are contrary by nature. Nero was the one who got this item. I looked at the opportunity, because sometimes you don't know how much you want to tell a player what you're going to do. But I was like, okay, so this is an online game. We're using online tools. We got D&D Beyond, all that. So I looked at this opportunity and went, okay, so I'll write up the items, because most of these I had to write up as custom items anyway, right? Because I was doing these conversions. I'll go ahead and write up the item, and then when the person character picks it up, I'm going to go ahead and just put it in their character's inventory for them and tell them, refresh your character sheet, you'll find that in your inventory. The player always goes and reads the item and see what it is. I make sure the curse is plain in the text of the item. No reason to hide it at that point. I want the person to roleplay what's happening. But it's up to them whether or not they let anybody else know that. Yep. Also, you can see other people's character sheets. So some players are naturally nosy. Like Richard is the kind... Forgive me, Richard. I'm not calling you out. Richard's the kind of person who keeps an eye on what's going on with other people's characters' abilities and stuff. So when some interesting thing comes up, especially if another player looks at it and goes, ooh, or something, you know.
Right.
He's going to be all like, oh, let me see what that is. You know, goes over there, reads the item. So suddenly he knows what but keeps his mouth shut. Doesn't ever let it on that he knows until we're talking later.
Out of here.
But it's interesting because Nero just immediately started playing that contrariness and none of the other players knew what was going on. So it really looks like her character just became an asshole.
Right.
Any reasonable suggestion really makes. And she doesn't play it in ridiculous ways. Because, again, it's on the player, right?
Yeah.
As a game master, I've decided the entirety of this situation is on you. If you as a player decide to share the information about the curse with everybody else, I'm not saying you can't.
Right.
If you decide to roleplay it but make it obvious, like, you know, hey, why don't you come over here and have some food? No, I will never have food with you. That is a terrible... In fact, anything you suggest, I'm going to do the opposite. I mean, if you want to be ridiculously obvious about it, you have that power. I would just be kind of disappointed if you did. And Nira beautifully handled it. And she still has the fucking ring on after, I don't know, like 12 or 14 sessions since she got it. And just... Nobody's really figured it out. The characters haven't really figured it out. And the players all know by now. Because at some point, I literally was laughing so hard about a situation, I broke down and told everybody.
Right.
And everybody thought it was great fun, but now it's the characters, of course, don't know one or the other. So, you know, the only thing that's happened is this one time somebody offhand mentioned, don't tell Octavia. She'll just tell you it's a bad idea. And that's as close as it's gotten. And I think that is fucking brilliant.
They say
Stone of Ill Luck.
Oh
gosh, yeah. That sounded like a personal story.
Yeah.
I was not there for it, but I heard about it, and it was very funny.
I had a player who had that, and it's like, it's a minus one to, I think,
all kinds of
checks.
Yeah.
But it presents itself as
a stone of good luck.
A good luck, plus one to everything. And the character didn't know. The player didn't know.
Oh.
I knew.
So you were just making the adjustments.
I was making the adjustments, and it took weeks before someone, like, oh, 16. Oh, you just hit. Then the next player, 16. You miss.
And at some point, you're sitting there going, he's going to figure it out.
Yeah, and they finally figured it out.
And that was just a little disappointing.
You said that happened numerous times before somebody picked up on it.
Yeah, it had happened multiple times.
No, they're just not paying attention.
Yeah.
Not thinking about it.
And that was when they finally realized, wait. And they thought, honestly, they thought I made a math error. Like, what? No, you just said 16 hits. I'm like, yeah, I did. It misses. What? I'm like, it misses.
I like the fact that that's where they went. Like, the DM screwed up. Let's let him know real quick.
And so, at that point, I let him make, I think, an Arcana check. I'm like, you know what? Just roll me an Arcana. And they rolled really high. I'm like, you, there's something with that stone. And then we moved on. And it was like after combat, they started investigating it and figured out what was going on.
Nice.
I had some stuff like that happen in your guys' hag fight. You're like, wait, what do you mean that doesn't hit?
Yeah, because the hags have all kinds of weird...
Yeah.
When you have a coven.
That's the other thing, is though, I mean, there might be situations, perfectly reasonable situations, in which those roles would happen with those results.
Yeah.
Because of powers or abilities that the enemies have that you don't, as a player, know about.
Right.
So, I mean, a lot of times players wouldn't even bother questioning that sort of thing. But occasionally you're going to get somebody frustrated that goes, well... Yeah.
I think it took where someone rolled and then the player rolled the exact same number immediately after.
Right.
And I said no.
Interesting. Have you guys gotten your hands in my game on anything cursed? I don't think so.
Not that I can think of. We have...
I mean, that you know of.
Yeah, that we know of, right.
I have some suspicions, but no, not that I know of.
I'm just curious. You guys have picked up some interesting items here and there.
Yeah.
But we've also had a lot of weirdness in that game where the characters have been in different situations and sometimes don't have all their items.
Right.
You know, because they're going through different realities and things would change on them. That's the other thing we did that really kind of screwed up the equilibrium of that party was that the situation kept getting out of control. You know, you find yourself, they reacted real well. They handled it real well, but you find yourself in a new situation where you're suddenly having to acclimate to everything going on. You know, it's like it's suddenly part of the mystery is what the fuck is happening right now.
Every time we'd go to a new place, it was almost like we had to almost figure out the rules of this reality.
Right. Which was the point, which is actually what I wanted to do. Originally, I had actually thought about making that literally the case and using some experimental different house rules so different realities actually changed the way things worked. And then I realized I didn't want to fuck with any of that.
Right.
Especially when you have D&D Beyond and stuff that already has hard-coded standard rules in the system.
Yeah.
And we were online at the time, and I just didn't want to deal with it. But, so I found other ways to reflect it, you know, and to kind of build that in. I did feel a little guilty after a while about constantly putting you guys, okay. So, you know, everything changes. You're in a new place. How much time has passed? You're not together. You're in a weird place with weird people around you. They seem to know you, you know.
This place they know you. This place they don't. This place death is more fluid. This place.
This one went wee all the way home.
Yeah.
It's been a real roller coaster.
Bad when you dropped Squelch into that, like, healer's house, and I was like, nope, this is a cult. And he climbed out the window and ran away.
Are you kidding me? That was fucking awesome.
And I was like, nope.
I had expected those guys to have more impact on the story that happened immediately after that. Unfortunately,
Squelch was gone.
Squelch had other plans. I love it. And
I mean, with Venkarn, I'm sure there was more plans with that collar.
Oh, no, those plans have yet to come to fruition.
Yeah.
There's more than...
I'm sure when Venkarn went, all right, I'm just going to kill myself, kind of.
So, I mean, the really interesting thing, and I haven't put it in the game yet, so I don't necessarily know how she'll deal, is what happens if she gets her hands on one of those collars, knowing what she now knows.
Right.
Because there's serious pros and cons.
Yeah.
But they are actual pros and cons. It's like... choice being made.
If I can get that collar onto one of them with control of it.
What can I possibly do? You know, or, you know, what about the fact that it gave you the ability to accelerate your powers?
Right.
Which was a big goal of hers.
Yeah. Yeah, or you know, could I potentially put the collar on myself with me having the control?
Yeah, or put the control in the hands of somebody I trust, but can I trust that?
Right.
You know, or what are the downsides?
There,
you know?
If I got a hold of one, there'd be a lot of interesting questions.
Yeah, and it's always to me a matter of the dividing line between questions and experimentation.
Right.
So, I mean, that's definitely there, and I wouldn't have introduced it if I didn't know that I'd have that opportunity, because obviously this was a tool that these people use, and you are going to be dealing with these people in the real world.
Right.
You know, but in that dream world that you guys are in, you had a chance to learn some of those things. You guys had a chance to learn a lot of things. That was actually one of my more fascinating kind of ideas with this group, and it's one that happened completely by accident. I was working on a completely different plan.
Right.
And something that somebody said during a previous session made me realize I had a real opportunity here to provide actual, actionable intelligence to the party that the enemies in their realm would have zero way of knowing the party had.
Right.
And I'm like, that is just too fucking good.
Yeah.
Right? And whether or not you guys did anything with that was entirely up to you. And you haven't had a chance yet. But you're getting there.
I mean,
first thing that happened when you guys got back is a couple of the characters headed back to the area that those people were in the dream world. And you guys haven't yet gone, you know, but wait a minute.
Right.
You know, what about the possibility that that's really happening? I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
So
I'm looking forward to being able to get back on, you know, on the Zoom call. And
Yeah. Like we were saying, it probably won't be this week.
Yeah,
because
stupid life.
Shit happening with our traveling back and forth and everything.
The real world keeps getting in the way of my fantasy world.
You know, sitting in a car for 8.5 hours is actually pretty exhausting.
But, it's so boring.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, so... And it's really hard to be like, I spy with my little eye something brown, and somebody goes, grass. You know, because
I spy something
else up here.
I
spy
no, it
something,
was a stick.
I spy something brown. Kansas.
You know what? It only looks that way. Once you get to Colorado, Kansas looks pretty fucking green.
Yeah.
Up there in the mountains, nothing grows. Nothing
grows.
Our front yard is a bunch of tufted, sort of gray, yellowy, brown, grass-like scrub.
Yep.
That's exactly what it is. And our backyard is nothing but dirt.
Yeah.
No, I'm renting, so I give a shit. I don't have to take care of a lawn. That's fine. Yeah. I bought a little electric weed eater because, like, all we got to do is do a little bit of edging here and there. And that's only because there are a couple weeds that'll grow.
Yeah.
Now, we got a neighbor, like, two doors down that has a green fucking yard. And I'm like, how much water do those fuckers waste?
All the water.
Because that is not natural here. No. Not natural. You know, Jonica loves growing things. She usually has a pot garden. It's going to be too much work here. Now, she hasn't had a chance to get started on it because, you know, she broke her leg. Well, we're in Colorado.
Yeah. It's legal there.
I mean, that's true.
But not what I meant.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think that's what you meant, but that's how it sounded.
That's what they're called, though, right? Pot gardens.
Yeah,
that's what some people call them.
I'll just remind everybody of the one time I went to Colorado to pick up a pig, and my mom said, just be careful for those kinds of stores. I was like,
They have the pot there, Alicia.
The marijuana.
The marijuana.
The marijuana. That's
what
they
she
have
said.
The marijuana. Those kinds of stores.
I'm like, oh my gosh,
you ever
gosh,
been in a dispensary?
Mom.
Nope.
I haven't.
Yeah, I had to do it once to see what it was like before we'd ever tried anything, you know. Like,
right.
Find the one with the Girl Scout cookies out front.
There you go.
Double win.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good call. Brilliant, actually.
Yeah. Those girls are smart.
I remember that news story. It was like the first year that, I think Colorado was the first one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was the first year that they had them, and a Girl Scout set up in front of and sold out in like 20 minutes.
Our little town does not, I mean, there are dispensaries, but they're not like obvious. I mean, there's not very many. They're not like near anything else. I mean, I don't know. I haven't even found them. I just know they're there.
Yeah.
And I don't say that because I do like DoorDash. And so you'd think that, I guess everybody with the munchies is elsewhere.
Right.
You know, I mean, I have delivered to a lot of places that smell like people are smoking.
Well, you're not getting the delivery straight from the dispensary to the Taco Bell?
Exactly. Yeah, and it's funny because I picked up a lot of people that reach here in Wichita.
Yeah.
You know, being a Lyft driver, Uber driver here in town, I picked up a lot of people that smelled like pot, and it's not legal in Kansas.
Right.
Whereas you go out to Colorado, and you'd expect but when I deliver, like, well, at least, not, I wouldn't say once a day, but at least a few times a week, I definitely get a delivery to someone who, that's what you smell
that's
when you walk out. A lot of that's at their college. Yeah. Like the dorms out there, which, you know, so it could be them, it could be somebody two doors down. It's a dorm.
Yeah.
But, you know, they got the munchies for a reason, right?
I mean, I've noticed that. I know I've told Alicia that's doing Uber Eats.
Mm-hmm.
Every apartment building. I don't care if it's the nicest one down to the scariest one you don't want to go into. Every last apartment building I go into to deliver food smells like pot.
Marijuana. Yeah. It's the thing. It's the thing. Yeah. And you know, especially obviously in poor areas because people need the freaking escape.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's an easy,
but I've,
entertainment.
I've been in the,
just happens to be role playing games.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's, I don't know that it's better.
Yeah.
Is it healthier? It remains to be seen.
I don't know. I guess we're all part of the devil now, right? Because of D&D.
Yeah, I did a YouTube video recently. If you look it up on our YouTube channel, where I was talking about the Satanic Panic, the moral panic of the 80s. Because it's like Stranger Things Season 4 had like a mention of it in the first episode.
Right.
And I forgot about the internet when I did this. It's like the first thing that happened is people tell me they weren't going to watch the video because I mentioned right at the outset. It's like, so if you watched Stranger Things recently, this thing came up, you may be wondering, like, well, haven't watched it, no spoilers. So I suddenly realized I need to put no spoilers in my title.
Right.
But yeah, I was like, how many people, younger people, would have no clue? You know, I actually, you know, grew up and was playing D&D during that period. I get it, you know, and it was kind of surreal, just like that show often is. It's kind of surreal with things that are just right out of my childhood.
Right.
Especially as a D&D player. It was like really great. But I got some cool responses, got some cool comments on it. I think I need to figure out, I don't know that I want to build on that because I was really just doing a video where I was using a lot of my knowledge of gaming history at that point and looking up specifics so I had events to talk about and could get them right, you know. But I don't necessarily want to do a channel where that's all I'm talking about. It's like, you know, in this week's episode of me talking about the history of gaming, like I'm the fucking expert. There's a lot more people out there that know a lot more about it than I do. But I've got plenty of stuff to talk about. We've had like, you know, 87 years of podcasting.
When we say this is 277?
Something like that, yeah. I don't know. I slept since then.
Right.
I mean,
it's a podcast. Honestly.
Micro sleeps.
It's a whole new. Done that? It's a whole new day.
It is. That's right. Well, not in my time zone.
Well, yeah.
Can you ask micro-nap?
Micro-nap? You don't know the micro-nappage?
No.
You definitely need to learn.
Yeah.
Actually, it's a real thing. It's that thing where you like start to nod and then wake up. You actually do fall asleep for seconds.
Yeah.
Too far.
You're not supposed to admit that.
Right. That's what the Mountain Dew is for.
I realize that we're in your living room, but this is being recorded for posterity.
Sorry, that's guys. Basically public. That was a lie. It was a joke.
Just, you know, obviously.
I happen to be a very good sleep driver. I've had lots of practice.
Same.
That's just a truth. It's a truism.
Yeah.
Deal with it. I spend a lot of time on the road. I drive for a living most of the time.
Yeah.
You I'm just driving to work. I'm like, maybe I should have called in sick. I probably shouldn't be shifting dangerous animals.
That's why I keep one of those with me at all times.
There you go.
The little 5-hour energy shots.
You know, to be fair, you do go to work at like fuck all early in the morning. So.
Not anymore. I go in at 7's my clock.
Oh, that's not bad.
It's not obscene.
That's not bad.
When we were raising Lily, I'd go in at all hours.
Yeah. You'd go in every 2 hours.
No. Thank God we alternated who was going in to feed the baby.
But still, you were like, you didn't have a day off for 6 months.
Yeah, I had the 3 a.m. feeding, and then I would clock in at 5:30. So I'd go in, I'd clock in for 10 minutes.
Please God, don't give us another one of those.
I don't know, it could happen. We have a female that's on the list for fostering.
Oh.
So if somebody has a baby and mom doesn't make it, or mom rejects it, she can take them.
Then I imagine that's actually that much harder.
Honestly, because of the female it is, it'll be faster at least.
Yeah.
It should be only a couple week lead time. But
still, it's a lot of work. You guys do a lot of work.
We do.
Don't get paid enough for it.
No.
that's a problem with there's stuff you're passionate about. You know what?
Because they're like, we don't have to pay you well because you like your job.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. What's the adage? find some, you know, find a way to make a living based on the things that you're passionate about. You won't ever work a day in your life. And the truth is, find a way to make a living at the things you're passionate about, and you will never be paid worth a shit.
You'll never be paid a day in your life.
I was going to say, my body's falling apart, and I'm too young for this shit.
Trust me, I know. I'm a musician who refuses to play for the exposure. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
You should just be happy to come entertain my crowd.
Oh.
You know, which... I get it's like it's like the whole pay for play GMing,
yeah,
which has been a hot topic at various times. I always find it interesting that it's a hot button topic too, because who's got a horse in this race? You know, are you upset because somebody else wants to make money at something that you are passionate about doing for free, or that it disrupts the purity of the art because somebody commercializes it?
So I will say, I saw a TikTok recently from someone I just started following. Their channel's newish. I'm trying to remember. I think he's the rules lawyer on
TikTok. For you people over the age of TikTok is no.
Yeah.
Whoa. That's not true. I follow somebody who's non-binary and like 50-something.
I didn't say anything about what age we were talking about.
If you have more than 3 gray hairs on your head. No, I'm just...
That was me at 17.
Right.
Well, that's a you problem.
That is often me.
At any rate. Somebody was talking about that because it's been a hot button topic, but they were saying, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean monetary compensation. Like, you can pay your GM in saying thank you. That is a form of...
Well, obviously, most of the time the controversy is happening, people are talking about cash.
They are, but I do think it's important to say, like, the GM's a player at the table, too.
Yeah.
And sometimes just letting your GM know that you had a good time is all they really need.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm perfectly happy with that.
I am too.
I have, I can honestly say that I have never been paid to run a game. I cannot say that I haven't been offered, but circumstances are not necessarily the way, the kinds of games that I like. It's not necessarily something I would get much out of it. I don't want to do something that I enjoy in a format that is going to not be enjoyable.
Right.
It's like, as a radio guy, I got a lot into doing music for clients too. And making jingles, while initially it seemed like kind of a fun way to use my talents to create value added to what we were doing, once it became something that was even mildly in demand, I realized that I didn't enjoy making jingles. I enjoyed the challenge of creating something musical until I felt like I'd done everything I wanted to do with it.
Right.
And then as an artist, as a creative, I was ready to move on to other things. That is actually very strongly a creative focus. When it is the distinction between somebody who does something to create value and somebody who does something to create art.
Yeah.
And this is applicable to running games just as much as it is to anything else that has a creative.
I was going to bring it up, the dice making. When we started all of this, Alicia was very clear, like, this is going to just be a hobby. We don't want to make it into a thing. And now it's a thing.
But is it a business that you're wanting to do for the purpose of making it a business, or is it a business that you want to do because it's fun right now to see what you can achieve? I mean, I realize you're just still getting your toe wet in it.
But I would say yes to both.
Both?
Yeah.
You would love to be able to make a business venture out of it that would actually be sustainable, I assume.
I mean, eventually that would be really nice.
This is like what I want to do for a living, for example. And that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, I know a lot of people who actually do it.
My brother is a tattoo artist. He is in a highly in-demand market, and he is actually a relatively in-demand artist because he has worked hard to get there. But he has a hard time enjoying art the way he used to. He was, when he was younger, before he started down this career path, very passionate about art. And he has to work twice, three times as hard now to find art to be passionate about.
Right.
And usually it has nothing to do with tattooing, what he does. And then you got to find the time outside of your tattooing to make it that way. And hey, that's even with the fact that he has long since moved to the level in his career where he doesn't do just anything for anybody. He picks and chooses his clients, and he only does his own artwork. So it isn't something you bring to me and I make that on your body.
Right.
He doesn't do that stuff anymore because he doesn't have to pay his dues anymore. You know, and I think that's interesting, but the fact that he still doesn't find the kind of satisfaction in the art is sad to me.
It's when a hobby becomes a job.
Right. And I always felt that way about music because I've had opportunities in my life to consider enterprises where I could have used my music, not in the way that I'd always wanted to. Like, it wasn't somebody coming up to me and saying, hey, kid, I love your band, sign this record contract, we're going to make albums, which is what I thought I wanted when I was younger, and still wouldn't mind necessarily as I'm older. Although now I'm less interested in having somebody else control the other end of that contract and more interested in finding a way to make albums on my own terms, and now realizing that album isn't even a term anymore.
Well,
and nobody fucking makes a physical album anymore, so do we even require the same construct? I don't even know. Anyway, it's its own deal. But I've had opportunities to take my talents and do, like, the jingles, other things with them.
Yeah.
And decided, you know, that is the thing I wanted to do, including things like being part of somebody else's, like, touring act.
Yeah.
You know, hey, kid, I need a bass player, you know, because I play guitar, bass, keys. I do a lot of writing. You know, I didn't really do studio music if I wanted to. I would probably enjoy studio music a little more, but by and large, it's not something I want because I'm afraid of becoming jaded.
Yeah.
And then I will come to detest this thing that brings me so much joy. And still does after 40 years.
Say, with the pay-to-play DMing, I wouldn't want to ever run a game like that because I just feel like the stress would be too high. I mean, if I'm running a game, like a one-shot, and I screw it up, okay, the people are out some time, and that sucks. But if they're out some time and the money that they put into it...
It actually is something relevant, I think, too. You have to consider the terms of that arrangement, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you figure the people that probably do it successfully are people who have very rigid controls of what they're doing. Like, if I'm not going to be satisfied running published material, or, you know, if I'm not going to be satisfied without certain say over X, Y, and Z, that's in my contract up front.
Right.
If you don't like that, find somebody else to do the dirty. But you're still being paid to provide a service, and you have to assume that the quality of the service, like any other service,
is worth what you're paying.
Is commensurate.
Yeah.
And I think that my talents running games would probably be commensurate in that regard. I've had, you know, 40 some odd years of practice, but I have my own, again, I have my own inimical style, and we already know the game I run isn't something everybody wants.
Right.
Could I run the game everybody wants? Yeah, but it isn't the same skill set. At that point, I'm not actually exercising skills I enjoy. You know, I just doing something mechanical that I can do that anybody else with similar skills could have done. Right. It doesn't require my expertise. What the fuck are they paying for? The prestige of my name at the top?
Yeah.
And most people don't care. Now, that is a saying that I can't... I mean, I realize that I have to be a little tongue-in-cheek about this because I run convention.
Yeah.
There's money involved.
Yeah.
People pay to come sit at tables that I provide for 3 days, and maybe I'm not running the games, although occasionally I do run games that people pay for. I still have to be realistic about the fact that I don't have... that's not the service I'm providing.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, but it's not like I don't personally make any money off of the conventions. So.
Break even and you call it good.
Yeah, if we're lucky.
Yeah.
Most years is a little bit out of pocket by the end, but you know, as long as it's a manageable amount, I am super stoked to do it again.
So everyone out there here in October this year.
TsunamiCon. Coming your way, October 21st through 23rd. Check out all the deets at TsunamiCon.org. And be there. Man, we've already got a few, we started getting games and events on the schedule because I opened that up and asked people, I contacted some people I know and have them start. Your friend Rachel put a couple games
Raylan.
Up. Raylan, thank you. Sorry. I'm going to cut that out. Your friend Raylan put something up.
Yep.
Quiet Year.
I think she put two sessions of the Quiet Year.
Are you familiar with it?
I know of it. I've listened to a podcast that played it. I've never got a chance to play it.
So have I. The same story. I think it sounded fascinating. It sounded like a fascinating game. A really interesting experience. And she was the first one to submit something. I was like,
yeah.
How exciting is this? How
her husband's running a home game it's a D&D game, but started the whole game playing the Quiet Year to build the world, and now playing D&D in it.
I just hadn't really been clear on how much of a role-playing experience it is, and I realized that it really depends on what you put into it.
Yeah.
You know, because the focus of the game is still very much in your court. But I'd be curious to see how it rolls out. I hope it's successful.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot on the schedule yet, but there will be.
But it's also 4 months away.
Yeah, it is. So. Yeah. Which seems like a long time until it isn't.
Right.
It's only 4 months away.
Yeah.
Yeah, for those of you who are, you know, madly making dice to stock your inventory for the booth you're planning to run.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been definitely check it out. Badges are now on sale. Badges are available. Hotel rooms can be booked. This is a good time to do it. Plan in advance because the housing block is open right now and we need to get as many of those rooms booked as we can early so that people get the rooms they want and so that I have to pay less. but there is that. You can help out the convention a little bit by staying at the hotel the convention is at and enjoying the weekend as a holistic experience. Oh my God, that's terrible. Why would you ever want to do that? Love it. So I'm seriously excited though.
Yeah.
And even though I will not have to drive, you know, all those freaking hours to get there and back, but we're still, I mean, that'll be a long weekend for us though. So it won't be as bad. Like this weekend we like rolled in today and we're leaving in 2 days heading back home. Whereas that weekend we roll in on a Thursday and leave on a Monday. Actually, I'm thinking about staying the extra day if we can, if we get that, if Jonica especially can get that Monday off work, which I don't think would be a problem. We'll stay the extra day and then have an in-person game here Monday night.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be fun.
If you guys aren't completely gamed out.
Well, yeah, I'll be looking for a game. We're not going to get a chance to game.
We're not going to get a chance to play a lot, man. Not running the booth. That's sad.
I told you could go play.
Yeah. We said we'll both try to run off for at least one game.
Excellent plan. I like this plan.
Yeah.
It's a good plan. I like the plan. All right. I'm going to let Alicia go to bed. I think it's probably a little on the late side for her. But I've still got AFW weekend to look forward to. And, you know, he's selling some tickets this weekend. Talk about we're selling tea. It's going to be fun. So I'd say come see us. But by the time you hear this, it'll be long over.
Right.
But I appreciate you guys talking to me.
Yeah.
I appreciate you hanging out with us this weekend a little bit. Give us a place to crash.
Yeah. We got a bed.
Yeah. You have a spare room.
That worked out well. Appreciate it. So, you guys are so, we're so Potter adjacent with everything that it took me a while to realize, oh, that's a Narnia reference of all things. It's like, wait a minute, it's a spare room.
We have, we have a lot of Potter, but
you have a very eclectic mix of stuff, yeah.
Our house is full of random shit we've picked up from various places.
And some of them are made into miniatures and end up on the game table.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to episode number 277 of Metagamers Anonymous. I'm going to go ahead and get on out of here. My name is Eric.
I'm Joe.
And I'm Alicia.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.